please.
Should be good.
All right. Welcome, everyone, to the Aries Working Group call for June 26, 2019, or at least that's what it is in many parts of the world. As noted, this call is being recorded, so the recordings will be posted following the meeting at the bottom of the page. I will welcome everyone. Hopefully, I guess I'll paste one more time the document that we're looking, that I'm sharing on the screen in the chat. If you could go in and sign your name, we'd appreciate it. Things to cover, antitrust policy. So the Linux Foundation antitrust policy is visible on your screen right now. Please take a moment to read it or just remember it from the many times you've heard it. Don't do things that are against competition laws. There is also a link to the Hyperledger Code of Conduct. Please very much follow that. If you haven't taken a look at it, please do. Agenda for today is here. What I'd like to start with is we'll do the announcements, which are a few in here, and then we'll do introductions and continue on. So a couple of introductions. I've got some BC Gov ones mentioned there. We are going to have a moderately formal collaboration with people who are building mobile agents over the next little while. So if you are interested in hearing more about that, please get in touch. As well, just hours ago, we posted what we call a code with us in the BC government, which is basically a bounty. It's 50K Canadian for a team, a developer or a team to take an Aries-based agent and make it into an identity provider for an identity access management solution, something like Red Hat's KeyCloak, specifically Red Hat's KeyCloak, and ideally as general as possible so it can be used for others like ForgeRock or whatever. So that opportunity was posted today. It will close in a week. So we're taking applications for that, and then we'll pick, hopefully have some submissions, and we'll select someone to do that in the next few days after that. Daniel's going to talk a brief announcement about that's a separate thing. Aries RFCs, the process to move it, the link is here. We're continuing to move RFCs over. If there's anything you see that you would like to have moved over sooner, either put an issue in and ping somebody, assign it to someone that you know has been involved in the creation of that RFC, or take a shot at moving it yourself and move hypes that should be Aries RFCs, move them over, and then we'll close them down in the hypes and leave just the things that are relevant to Indie in the Indie hypes repo. This was announced last week. There was a series of Aries SDK repos created, so those now exist for various languages. Do take a look at those. There's and each of them has an assigned maintainer. Other news on repos, the Aries Cloud Agent Python that was discussed last week, over the last couple of weeks, and was agreed that it should be moved across. That will transfer will happen likely this Monday. It now exists in the BC Gov organization, and we'll be transferring that, we think, on Monday over to the Hyperledger organization. Daniel, you want to talk about the Aries static agent a bit?
Sure, not a lot to say, just that we got it up on the Python package index. So it is available for download and use as a library. It got a little bit of polish since we demoed it last week, but besides that little bit of polish, it's about the same thing. So the link there will have README and other info, and yeah, so that's it.
Yeah. Good. I should add that about the Aries Cloud Agent Python. The main work we're doing right now is trying to get things readmes and documentation, get the read the docs generation completed. The CI/CD pipeline is basically ready to go. So we're pushing that forward. And I think that's about it. Aries SDK chat has been added, I believe, on HyperChat, Hyperledger.org. I haven't seen that. So those are the announcements. Anyone have anything else they wanted to announce at this point? Okay. Next up, I'd like to do an introduction. So if anyone is new or recently rejoining this call, feel free to unmute and tell us about yourself, what you're doing, and your interest in the community. No pressure if you don't want to, but we'd love to hear what new folks are up to and what they're interested in.
Hello, guys. My name is Bruno. I'm from Brazil. I'm just knowing more about Hyperledger. I have just participated yesterday on the first Latin America bootcamp of Hyperledger. So, yeah, I'm looking forward to contribute to this amazing project. Yeah, nice to meet you.
Good stuff. Welcome, Bruno. Yes, I removed the announcement of that because I realized it was the last 2 days, so I hope it went well. Sounds like it did if you're interested enough to jump on calls. That's awesome.
Okay, thank you. Yeah, I didn't finish to read all the documentation. I'm also seeing a YouTube video about more about Indy and Aries. Yeah, I think in some days I will learn a lot, and hopefully I can contribute as soon as possible with you guys.
Awesome. Welcome. Anyone else want to chime in at this point? All right, we'll move on. Related meetings, I know Mike Lauder's not here. I don't know if there was an IRSA meeting. Anyone have anything on the IRSA meeting this week?
I did not participate, but I did see they had notes listed. I can read them out real quick from Rocket Chat. Les talked about bulletproofs. They're adding more tests and code documentation. There's some discussion around non-creds 1.0. And then they're going to put that discussion into IRSA docs repo. Looks like Definity is getting interest in ZMix. And I'm trying to parse through all the stuff that's relevant to us actually. It looks like the main stuff relevant to us is just some non-creds 1.0 discussion. And then they're adding, or they're starting to work on getting trusted execution environment, interfaces added into IRSA. So,
okay. Paul, you want to talk about the Indy Semantics call that was yesterday?
Yep. So we were Ken went over the context for rich schema objects hype, and that's gone. It's been published and is up for review. So we had a nice discussion about that, and they kind of went through that. It was all good. We also discussed the idea of building an Aries semantics work group, but we've decided to hold off on that for a little bit. Probably maybe beginning of September, sometime like that, we might do something with an Aries semantics work group. But we thought we can. While there's still stuff kind of incubating in the Indy semantics area, it has made sense to kind of keep that going for now.
Sounds good. Okay, thank you. I think those were the meetings this week. So I think that wraps up meeting review. I will post that I am hosting, I'm going to be Sean this week, so I'll be hosting the Indy working group call tomorrow morning. I'm going to do Sean didn't provide me with other speakers, so I'm going to speak on a thing I've been thinking about related to the difference between the trust stack and the technical stack that's actually implemented in Aries. And so I've got a bit of a presentation on that. So I'm going to be presenting on that. And if anyone has anything they want to talk about tomorrow, please DM me on Rocket Chat and let me know. Maybe we can coordinate something. But other than that, that's what we're going to talk about tomorrow. And then there'll be an open discussion. Daniel, you're up on agents and hubs. Daniel Hardman, you there? There you are. You're on mute.
Hey, can you guys hear me?
Yeah.
Okay. Could I share my screen for just a second?
You bet.
Okay.
There you go.
Some of you probably are aware that the Decentralized Identity Foundation. Oops. Let's see if we can get everybody else muted.
Yeah. Can people mute? I'll try to mute folks, but if they could mute, that would be appreciated.
Okay. So anyway, some of you are probably familiar with the work that has been done on the concept of hubs in the Decentralized Identity Foundation. And the work that we've been doing on agents in the Indy group and the work on hubs has, I think both of those forms of work have been important, and we have made headway on it, but I think we've also started to create a little bit of dissonance or confusion, because the way we've been describing agents and the way we've been describing hubs caused people to say, well, wait a minute, aren't these the same thing? Don't they overlap? And this is why I'm showing you a Venn diagram. There's some things that we've described about agents and some things about hubs that actually are kind of in common. And this dissonance was significant enough that at the last Internet Identity workshop, we had several sessions where we were trying to identify the areas of overlap and figure out, could we just harmonize those so that we all encrypt the same way, or so that we all route messages the same way or version things the same way? Or do we need to make these things distinct so that it's clear which thing to use? And we had quite a bit of progress at that IIW, and we're able to harmonize many things. Some of the work that's being done by Kyle in RFCs on encryption is follow-up work on that. There's a number of other kind of follow-up items, but we felt like it would be important to explain to the world how these two concepts fit together. And so we have created a paper, and when I say we here, this is a product of Daniel Buckner at Microsoft, Sam Curran, who's on the call, and me. And we've written a paper that kind of explains what the relationship between hubs and agents is. What our intent is to give people a mental model that makes them feel harmonious. And so what I wanted to do is just announce that this paper has been written in draft form, and we're intending to publish it somewhere soon, but I would love to have people go read it and tell us what they think. And if you don't know anything about the hub agent history, you don't need to worry about it. Hopefully, as you encounter documentation in the community, it will all naturally flow for you. But if you do have some of that shared background, your review would be appreciated. So that's all I wanted to say. The link to this paper is in the meeting agenda notes. And one other thing to note is that this is intentionally a high-level, non-technical or low-technical detail kind of a write-up. There will be an RFC and or some kind of documentation in DiffWorld that goes into this in greater detail. So if your feedback is, I wish there was more detail, save that for another time, or make the feedback in the in the document, but understand that we probably won't change the document to change its level of detail. And that's all I wanted to say. Thanks.
Excellent. Good stuff. That's cool. All right. Next on the topic, next on the agenda, Aries meeting schedule and format. So let's get meta. Richard and Tobias.
Thank you. You
take over?
Yeah, I was just, yes, Tobias is on. Do you have mute off, Tobias?
Yep, I'm here.
Success. So I appreciate people being flexible. Attending the Wednesday afternoon calls has been really hard for me and will continue to do so. And most of my team is based in Eastern Europe, and so the call is impossible for them. So one of the conversations I've been having with Tobias is how do we extend the calls to people in other time zones. On the indie maintainers call, we start rotating it between two time zones. And one of the proposals, we rotate between two or even three different call times. Tobias could meet with my Eastern European architects, independent of many of us, or we can have a call that's more Western Europe, US, more Europe and US centric, and it would be hard for Tobias to attend. So that's the proposal, but it goes a bit further. There's the other topic for conversation is how we can make best use of these calls, how we document them best, things like that. And the third item that I want to make part of the conversation today is what additional calls are needed. As we start talking about language specific libraries, or as we start talking about the indie area split that we're going to cover in a minute, do we want to cover those topics as part of this call, or does it not apply as much to this audience and we should bring in the specific contributors for separate calls? How much of that do we want to feed into a single call versus various calls? So that's the topic. Tobias, do you have anything to add to that, or is that a decent summary?
No, I think that's a really good summary.
So we'll take each piece individually. I was thinking about the best way to structure the conversation. Let's talk first about schedules. As we discuss schedules, the question is, should we have should we have a morning call, a US-Europe call, and a Europe-Asia call, so we initiate two additional calls? Or how best should we do those things? I realize this call works really well for 25 people, so I don't want to get rid of this call, but what should we do in addition to that, and how do we manage the coordination between the multiple calls?
Richard, I have a question. Why do you say there's a problem for people in Eastern Europe? Because I'm in Romania, and like it's 10 o'clock in the evening. It's not great. I'd rather not have meetings at 10 o'clock in the evening, but it's not like it's in the middle of the night or anything. So because it's obviously better to have everyone in one meeting, unless there's a really big problem with people having meetings late in the evening, then what is the problem with that?
Yeah, the engineers I work with and the architects specifically working on Aries and Indy, they're based in Moscow, which currently it's 10:20, but that is rather tough to make part of your regular routine. And though I do appreciate you attending, and in the winter it's even later. It's 11:30.
So, do you have proposals on specific times you're thinking of, and a process? I think it would help to have that, and then vary from there. So we've got something on the whiteboard.
What you're trying to raise, Richard, is what would be the best format potentially going forward? Would we want to have a rotating time zone call bi-weekly? Would we want to have two calls per week that collectively cover the world? Do we want to try and maintain a single call and try and find – we're never going to find a time zone where someone's not asleep on a round planet, but or some other option in and amongst then. I guess this first sort of step is to gauge community interest and thought around this.
So as we were having this discussion in a lot of different groups, the things that are always brought up is having one call works well for the reasons that were just pointed out, because everyone's on the same page and you don't have to repeat topics. The second mechanism that does work, but it's also quite difficult, is you end up having basically three calls around the globe. That way everyone gets a morning call and an evening call and kind of a mid-afternoon call, and usually you can only make two out of the three. That requires leadership around the globe as well, so that people can always run the calls. And it also means that it takes a lot of work to keep people on the same page. So ultimately, the best solution is to push as much as you can into asynchronous communications. So what we've been hoping to do was to move as much as we can onto the wiki and the mailing lists and the text-based communications channels, so that we can be more asynchronous to support people who have different time zone diversity issues, and then try to reduce the meetings altogether. But that being said, it's obvious that as we've built the RFC and worked our way through the RFC process, that having real-time communications over these types of discussions is critical to making progress quickly. So, you know, the question here is, how much is enough? How much is too much? Obviously, one meeting time is not quite enough because we're missing the folks out of India and Russia that are contributing to the code base. But at the same time, three meetings seems like it's probably too much for us right now. When we've tried to launch a second call for almost every group we've had, one call succeeds and the other call ultimately dies, meaning the people who are really motivated, like those who are on at 10 o'clock right now, find ways to make it to both calls, and that kind of sucks the life out of the alternative. So I think the next step, like was said, is we just need to put down, here's what we want to try, and decide what the success criteria for either continuing with that schedule or switching back to the old schedule would be.
Yeah. And so the proposal, the concrete proposal, Indy maintainers call shifted to say, instead of meeting twice a month, they meet once a month. They still meet twice a month, but once in each time zone. So one meeting is in the morning U.S. time, which covers Europe, and the second meeting is in the afternoon U.S. time, which covers Australia, New Zealand, and Asia. And the U.S. people are on both calls as a habit to provide that continuity. And each call has a portion of the call dedicated to summarizing the previous call in enough detail that people feel like they're consistent. It's worked okay. We've only been doing it for, what, Nathan, 6 weeks? So three rotations. And we've talked about maybe the frequency needs to increase to keep people closer. But the other proposal is that we keep having both calls every week in order to keep the conversation closer. Aries is moving very quickly at the moment. That might make more sense. And of course, one of the decision points is, would Tobias be the glue and glue together the two sets of calls, or would Nathan and Stephen and some of us Western US people be the glue in order to glue together New Zealand and Eastern Europe?
So I have a question about the contents. Are we planning to have the contents of these be overlapping? Is it very specific? Because my understanding is part of this work is driven by the Indy SDK Aries split. Or is it intended to be two separate meetings that discuss separate topics?
I'd like to avoid that it becomes separate meetings with separate topics unless people are really diligent watching the recordings, simply because then you end up with one that becomes an expert in one part of the code base and another becomes an expert in the other part of the code base. And it's hard to get that cross-pollination we're looking for. So I'd like to avoid that, but that's an open question.
Okay. The reason I was bringing this up is because if it was the second option, I could see it being very valuable to just set up a call for that work. And then we don't split this community is kind of what I was thinking.
Yeah, and that's part of the that's why I prefaced it by saying, what is our interest level in having the detailed SDK conversations or the detailed language library conversations in this call? This call is already fairly full, so I'm nervous about, that's one of the challenges is if we broaden the mandate of this call, how do we fit all the work in? But if we have separate calls, then it's going to be inconvenient for people, and it's hard to keep in touch with the entire community.
So I guess to answer that question, then I'll shut up, is I don't think it would be valuable. I think this is very good for protocol development and kind of the extensible design or the content layer. And I know we still have to figure that out, but the from my look at the indie SDK and stuff, there's a large barrier of entry to get involved and start coding in the Rust side of things. And so I think that should have the people who are actually wanting to be involved in that. And we can build around those people who are interested in that.
The challenge is we want to broaden that group. So if people here aren't participating in those conversations, then that's going to be a challenge.
Okay.
Besides the challenge that we currently have, which is the people who are implementing the protocols aren't currently, they'd like to be part of the specification conversations, but generally have had a hard time doing that. They've been following on Git in GitHub, but it's not quite the same as the high bandwidth conversations.
I mean, for me, I think without a concrete proposal, I mean, these are great ideas, but I don't think anyone can say anything unless we have either at least one concrete proposal or here are three options of what we could do. Without that, it's really hard to figure out what would be the way to go.
Yeah. I'm trying to leave space for Tobias to volunteer for things, but.
I think.
Okay, go ahead.
Maybe perhaps, Richard, the best step forward is to basically lay these options out and get a poll running in the team in terms of what, in the group, and we'll raise it next week to see what the community would prefer about the different variations we could have on offer, multiple calls a week, different time zones, one person acting as a relay, which group or which part of the world is going to act as the glue between multiple groups if there were to be those sort of options, and lay that out potentially as a poll. But I'm just wary, Nathan, as on an organizational level, is there any further guidance? As you said, this sort of thought has been going on in neighboring groups. Is there any further guidance we could get in general, so we're not setting some rules for Aries that is different to Indy, that is different to maybe other Hyperledger groups? Like, is there any guidance in place for working groups in general and how they manage these calls, or is it all just sort of at the discretion of the working groups?
We need to do a better job with agendas. That's not something to say in this call per se, because I think this call does better than most in terms of getting agendas out the day before. And we need to do better at more discussion on the mailing list. In particular, we should try to have the first few rounds of a back and forth and discussion on email before we have it on the agenda for a call. What that does in particular is it makes people know whether the topic is of importance or enough interest that it's worth getting up, you know, 3 or 4 hours early, or worth rearranging their evening schedule around trying to attend. We haven't seen a group in the SSI community yet be successful with rotating time zones. That's actually very difficult to do unless you're doing more of a slow moving international standard, because, you know, there's just too many things going on to where the multiple meetings stay in sync. What ends up happening is the Asia call ends up having very different content than the Europe call, ends up having different content than the North America call. And so it's hard to keep the whole group on the same page. So I'm hopeful we could do two calls in an effort to try to keep a secondary group up to speed, but I'm not optimistic that that would actually solve the problem.
So my concrete proposal is Thursday mornings at 7 a.m. Pacific, 8 a.m. Mountain, we start holding a very similar Aries call. And I can say that I'll be there, and the Everdim developers who are currently working on Indy and Aries will be there. And the question is, who else would attend that call with me?
Would that be in addition to the time slot that this call currently uses, or replacement for it?
That's probably the question, is do we rotate between the two, or do we do it in addition to this call?
And that's 7 a.m. Mountain, you're saying?
No, 7 a.m. Pacific, 8 a.m. Mountain.
Oh, Pacific. Okay.
And Richard, would that be once a week?
That's part of the question. If we want to rotate between the two, then it would be every other week.
I see. I got it.
Okay. And how much, and how, okay, I mean, I think my suggestion is we write something up and follow up next week with either host or put a poll up before next week, or put a poll up after we discuss, show the options. But like I don't know, a 7 a.m. Thursday, how many more people that brings in, you know, what time zones that affects. I'm happy to do it. But as I say, I don't know how many that brings. We would probably limit it to 1 hour because we want to have, you know, flow into whatever comes of the 8 a.m. Thursday call.
Correct.
So, I'm happy to do that. But I think we have to see who that benefits. But I like the idea that it could be just, you know, somebody who was attended this meeting would follow up with a summary, point them to the recordings. Maybe even we could volunteer someone to check the times of when particular topics were covered, and so that people could follow up with the recording, and then also do some fresh content there for anyone who wants to. But again, it would require leadership for somebody to take over owning that call.
And I can manage the call and the agenda, and yes, it would be 1 hour call. Unfortunately, I can't attend this call next Wednesday either. Well, I might be able to attend the first half, but we'll see how that goes. I'm not sure.
We'll figure something out.
Just publishing a poll by putting it in the agenda, or oops.
Last time we did it with, I can't remember. We can figure out how to do a quick poll. I think we can do like a Google form on it, I think would probably be easiest, or something like that. We just lay out an option or two. And I think the big thing would be to say, allow people to say, oh, how this would affect them and what calls they would likely attend.
Can we just use our Aries polling agent?
One day. Now,
Stephen doesn't have that done yet.
We might be able to have that by next week. We'll see.
Okay.
One, I would like to, I can share that as part of tomorrow's call with the indie community to see who'd be interested in attending that, because that's when we get that time zone.
Sorry, I just realized what you were saying. All you want is a count of people willing to attend. Okay, let's do a raise hand. There's a button on the participant list or somewhere that you can raise your hand. How many people would be willing to go? Let's take a moment and count how many people are willing to do that. So click raise hand in the Zoom mechanism.
I'm just noting that I have raised my hand, but I'm not super enthused about it. But I'll do it if I have to.
And for anyone searching for it, you just hit participants and it's a button at the bottom of the list, at least in most clients.
So Daniel has a partially raised hand.
By the way, the reason I'm raising my hand is because all engineering staff at Evernim have a meeting that directly conflicts with the time Richard has proposed, and so we would have to shift my meeting.
It may be there's a better morning time, but that was my concrete proposal.
Yeah.
So which day of the week is this?
Thursday at 8 a.m. Mountain.
Oh, I have to lower my hand. In fact, this is when the Technical Steering Committee for Hyperledger has its meeting, so it will always conflict with our status report, and it will always conflict with kind of the general Hyperledger coordination meeting.
Yeah.
What about at 8 a.m. Wednesday morning instead of Thursday?
I think the only thing that conflicts with is URSA.
And URSA's every other week?
Yes, it would be helpful if you pull open the Hyperledger community calendar as you propose times.
Yeah, okay, we tried this. It didn't quite work. I'm intrigued with who was on it. Mike, you're probably the one that it's the most valuable for. I think most others, Albert, you're in Spain, I believe, correct? So,
yep.
Yeah, so that would help you a bunch because it'd be a lot earlier in the day. But most others are US based, so I'm not sure it's helping a whole lot.
Can
Patrick, where are you?
Follow up question.
Who?
Everyone, lower your hand.
Thank you for reminding
me. Click the lower your hand button. Okay, go ahead, Kyle.
Who here is interested in participating in the Indie Aries SDK, which is about to come up? We may, you know what? Let's actually hold off until we have that discussion.
Yeah. Okay. Let's now move on to the next topic.
Well, there's two parts. Sorry. The first was sounding out the time. The second is discussing the meeting format. One of my concerns with this meeting is we spent a lot of time talking about specification, and I'm really keen for us to start talking about implementation and work streams. One thing we found very useful in the Indie SDK working group and the Indie Maintainers meetings is to start each meeting by saying, what are the work streams and what is our next release and what are goals around that release? What's progress towards that release? And I think really concrete in those things. I think there are a few work streams this group has already adopted, which is the, obviously we have the protocol stuff, but we also have the compatibility libraries. We have the Indie Cat stuff becoming the, or the Von Cat stuff becoming the Python agent, Python library. And we have the work stream on documentation. And so the question is, what is, you know, how do we stay focused on those work areas so that people contribute more concretely?
Yeah, I think we can do that, but I think it's still early. Like right now, until last week when Indie Static Agent or Aries Static Agent went in, until next week when Aries Cloud Agent goes in, there isn't anything in the Aries repos other than the RFCs. So that's the only thing to talk about. I agree, we need to start doing that. And I like your, you know, the release status stuff. You notice that as we talk today, Daniel pointed out, and he put that in right before the meeting to say, hey, Static Agent just had a release this week. We bumped up some stuff. So I think that's going to happen for sure, because people that are actually building those are going to, and the maintainers are going to want people to know about that. But I think we have to have some concrete stuff in there before we can start that. So I think it'll happen. But I don't think I think it's a little early by perhaps just a couple of weeks, but I think it's still a little early.
Hey, and that's where I challenge the idea that it's early, simply because we do have active work streams. We have the Python agent. We have the reference agent, the reference protocol compatibility suite tests. We have the documentation effort. Getting updates on these things and having more people say, the Arjun working on the Go implementation, he's another one that can't attend this call. He's made progress, being able to give him an opportunity to say this is when we're progressing. I think if we start saying we're pushing towards an Aries 0.1 release of something, it'll allow, one of the challenges I'm having with my team is figuring out how we put Aries into our roadmap, given that we're trying to get Indie into production in a short period of time. But if we don't understand the progress that Aries is making in a concrete way, we end up doing things that are competitive or divergent as opposed to being able to leverage the work that's on its way.
Fair enough. Yep. I mean, I'm happy to add that to the start and that we ping someone to represent each project as it comes live to basically put out a roadmap of what's happening each week. I think that'd be great.
That'd be
I get
really
what
useful.
You're saying, so. Yep.
So release status, work updates, PRs that people need. Yep. I found that as we start doing this on the Indie side, there's a lot of work going on that we weren't aware of before. That people say, hey, I'm trying to get this thing out. And that's been very useful. Okay. Any other comments on meeting format, how we make things more productive?
I just wanted to comment on this idea of a leader. Nathan, can you comment on what the TSC is planning to do for sub-project maintainers and kind of the hierarchy for that stuff? I've been seeing discussion on the email thread about...
Yes, I would suggest to anyone's interested just to continue that follow that discussion on the email thread. There's the thought that we've had a lot of what would be better suited as to be sub-projects as full-on projects in the past, where they depend on a particular blockchain or a particular component very tightly, and there's really no development interest in doing something more than that, even if there is architectural capability to do so. And we're thinking that grouping some of those projects together as sub-projects of another project would help with the overhead and the management, especially relative to Hyperledger staff. So you could think of basically like Hyperledger Composer is a good example of this, where it really was quite tailored and suited to Hyperledger Fabric. And even though in theory the blockchain chain code support could have been extended to other platforms, in practice there wasn't really any developer support to do so. And as that community kind of became more decoupled from the core Fabric community, the Composer community has really struggled to stay up to date with the changes and keep everything in sync. And so taking some of those types of projects and folding them into their overall framework project as sub-projects would be a way of helping manage and version and control them a little bit better and coordinate those types of changes over time in a way that reduces the burden on the overall structure of Hyperledger. Now, I don't know what the conclusions of that are. There's a subcommittee working on that on behalf of the TSC, and I look forward to what they propose for that.
Okay. Yeah, that I think we're already starting to do this, like with the static agent and the BCGov's IndyCat. We're turning them into sub-projects of Ares. I was just curious more how they were expecting us to structure those sub-projects in terms of like maintainership.
Yeah, so I would expect that we would end up having essentially a core maintainers group over the entirety of Ares, and then any of the sub-projects would answer to that maintainer group, similar to what we did in Indy with all of our different sub-projects in terms of GitHub repositories, where we had several different sub-components of Indy, but we worked together as Indy maintainers. I expect we want to follow a similar structure for Ares in that way. The other proposal I think that might work to help with some of our meeting load is we could start talking to Vipin about moving some of our cross-project coordination over to the identity working group call, where we do all the coordination between Ursa, Ares, and Indy perhaps over in that forum. But I also don't want to usurp that call if he's having productive discussions around the paper that they still haven't shipped.
Okay, sounds good. Thank you.
Okay.
Excellent.
Good enough, topic. Richard?
Yep.
Yes. We're going to have Richard talk now. And he's going to talk about Indy and Ares SDK split. So, Richard.
Thank you. I just want to preface this by saying Evernym has traditionally been a major contributor to the Indy SDK. Evernym is really nervous about how do we build the things we need in Indy and still do it in a way that works with Ares. And the sooner we understand the contours of an Indy SDK split, an Indy Ares split, the sooner we can make those kind of decisions. So that's why we're pushing this. However, this should not prevent anybody else from raising proposals. We're trying to push the conversation forward. We're not trying to usurp it. So just to be really clear about that. So IS 1285 is where we've been tracking this work. And the end result of this work is expected to be a design document, at least in the Indy SDK repo, and probably will impact other repos as well. And deciding how we're going to do things in Ares, need to decide where to put that design as well. Given that we don't know the right way to socialize this material, we started with a Google Doc. Thank you, Kyle, for helping me fix the permissions. I'm sorry that I had done them incorrectly when I originally shared the doc. But the idea is, we've been thinking about this for probably 2 weeks now. This is not a huge amount of thinking, but we've been trying to figure out exactly what we should separate and how. And so we recognize we've talked for 6 months now about an Indy SDK architecture improvement, Indy SDK 2.0. And specifically, there are a lot of concerns about the threading model. There's a lot of conversations about how language libraries and wrappers work. A lot of conversation about modularization and can we consume just the wallet? Can we consume just the ledger resolver? And how does libvcx fit in there? Because it's a different level of abstraction than the language libraries, and it sticks out a bit. And, of course, the agent-to-agent flows, we've talked about different ways to support that over the last 6 months. And there's always the question about how we work with hardware enclaves. That's been a frequent feature request that we haven't built in the past couple of years. On the Aries side, we recognize that we want ledger independent components from the NDSDK to move in. And we need an agent-oriented API, and then we need to create that pluggable resolver layer. And people have talked about renaming things, so they won't be wallets anymore. They'll be whatever we decide they'd be. I don't think we've made that decision. Maybe we have. So those are the goals. When we look at that, we see a few steps in the process. The first is that network resolver API. We really need to understand that before we can move forward. And so part of that feeds into the idea of DID docs. Indy predates DID docs and the DID standard with the W3C. And now we need to support it properly to give the ledger independence interoperability that we've been talking about. And so people are having a request. You're not supposed to have to request. People can't get into this document?
No, I still nope. can't either.
I said anyone on the web with the link, save. Link sharing updated.
All right, we'll give it a shot.
Still done?
It's working now. I've got
I'm in.
That's the third time I did that. I don't know. What I did. Anyway.
I only have you only access now.
I can't comment.
Okay, let's try this again. Anyone with a link can. Oh, what it is I keep seeing that with view, and then I keep hitting everyone in there. Anyone with a link can comment.
Comment.
Perfect. Thank you.
Thank you. And again, I apologize that that was no so much harder for me to manage than I expected. Okay, so we have that concern around the network resolver. We got to figure out that API. That's kind of the next thing. And we think handling the verifiable credentials entities is going to be pretty natural once we've decided what that resolver API and the DID doc portion of that needs to fit in. Indy 51 is where we've been tracking our work on DID doc over the last 3 years. It's more complicated than expected because you get into the challenge of synchronizing the different docs that are held in different wallets, different agents. That gets kind of messy.
Richard, yes, sorry. Sir? Just to ask about DID and DID doc functionality, are you guys strictly talking about DID peer implementation or DID sovereign DIDs resolvable? Or are we talking about like a full, like more like universal resolver, which has a pluggable driver architecture, which allows you to resolve any DID in the DID method registry?
Well, that is to be determined. It depends a lot on what people propose. I'm in favor of incremental steps towards the eventual universal resolver we want to have. But we need a vision of where we want to go so we can decide the right way to get there.
I don't want to hide that aspect of the conversation, but my strong preference would be to try and follow some of the architecture that Marcus Abadillo and the likes at Danube Tech have done, which I think is really cool as a driver, pluggable driver implementation. And then if we can just at least create the room for that, and then the only implementation that's explored for now is the peer DID and sovereign DIDs. That's fine, but I think we should make room for that.
I've been talking to Marcus about this topic, and Marcus is expecting to collaborate with whoever on the Aries team, puts forth a proposal. And so I'm assuming that it will include a lot of Marcus's ideas. One thing that I think would be different is that we won't have pluggable entities be callable as web services because it calls into question the security, and it means that you can't use the universal resolver on a mobile device in the same way without having dependencies on the internet being available.
So, okay, yeah, no, that's awesome. That's really good to hear. I would definitely agree with what you're saying there, Daniel, except I would just regard an HTTP client, which is calling out to a remote resolver, as just another form of driver. I don't see the disparity. I think you should be able to build an HTTP client-based resolver to resolve a certain method in certain instances. Say you've got an enterprise domain and they want to host each DID method resolver individually, then there is that benefit. And I don't think the architecture needs to necessarily exclude that in certain pursuits. I think, as you rightfully point out, in mobile agents, they shouldn't be using HTTP-based resolution. They should be doing it locally when feasible.
However, there are some DID methods where that will be impractical, such as the Ion network. You can't run a full Bitcoin node on a mobile phone. So I think we need flexibility in that domain.
So my thought on this is that we Aries should support at a core level the DID peer spec, for sure, the DID peer method. I think, and this is what I'm going to talk about tomorrow, I've shared this with a couple of people, but the credentialed exchange is actually at the protocol level, and credentialed exchange is the only thing right now that needs DID resolution, like DID resolution to a public ledger. The rest of the protocols we use don't touch the public DIDs. Now, there could be other ones, but they don't. And so the DID resolution actually can be part of the protocols. Rather, and as long as we support the DIDs, the peer DID, we actually have all we need for DIDCOM and for communications. So if you think about it that way, it's not fundamental that we have DID resolution. It's actually limited cases, which is a very important case. The actual core case that we want to handle, which is verifiable credentials, but it is just one of the protocols that is supported by Aries agent. So it kind of turns it upside down that universal DID resolution is not that crucial as an underpinning to Aries. And join the call tomorrow if you want to hear more.
I would just like to create the room to allow to move. So I would like to see the peer DID implementation in Aries be one method driver, basically, that plugs into a DID resolver. So you pass down to a DID resolver that has different drivers for different DID methods registered. And if you're talking in the context of peer DIDs, that's the resolver that... and we don't have to build that interface out virtually any more than that, but at least we've created the layer of abstraction that allows us to build upon that in different methods and potentially just at least identify and create space inside the architecture so that other participants that are coming along that potentially want to interoperate with Aries can see where other DID methods are destined to be plugged in.
I think what Stephen is suggesting is that the concept of a DID resolver is not necessarily needed if you just consider a DID method another protocol for an agent. Then every agent is a DID resolver for as many DID methods as it needs to use.
Yeah, I'm starting. Let's agree to carry on this conversation instead of going too deep on it right now, but I think this is a conversation that's ripe, and next week on this call, I've requested some time to talk about the peer DID method, and I think by the end of what I have to say, all of you will be saying, oh, it's that easy? Oh, well, we can just implement the peer DID method just like this, and if I'm lucky, I'll be able to actually demo an implementation of the peer DID method too, so hopefully
you're killing yourself with all-nighters just because you want to demo it.
No, I would never do that, Kyle.
Music to my ears, Daniel. That sounds awesome. That's exactly what I wanted to hear.
And to keep the conversation very action-oriented, so the next step in, we need to get an Aries 0.1 release. We need to get the code that's in Indy into Aries so people start using it and building it and advancing it. In order to get there, we need to understand the contours of this resolver API because that'll help us define what parts of the SDK move and how much work's involved. Sergey is the architect I work with, saw the DID doc piece of that is the hardest piece. And if Daniel's made a lot of progress there and if we do that, that'll be great. The question is, who is anybody willing to volunteer to drive this definition forward?
So a couple of things to throw out in terms of Hyperledger release tradition. It's normal that we shoot for like a 0.6 release that is kind of API complete, a 0.8 release that's kind of considered a beta, and then a 1.0 release that's considered API stable. So that may be something we want to use to help inform our version numbers, because that will help the TSC and others understand what phase or what level of maturity we've achieved.
Yeah, and I might have stuttered. I said 0.1 release. The simply taking the code that's in Indy and putting it somewhere that Aries people can start to play with it. That's my thinking.
Thank you.
Could you, Nathan, could you quickly rhyme those off again? 0.6 is what?
So a 1.0 release is considered production ready and completely stable. Usually in preparation for a 1.0 release, you do a full security audit. A 0.8 release has been considered kind of a beta, where it's kind of the thing before you get to 1.0. And then the 0.6 release is to say, okay, all the stuff is here. We're ready to start working on the beta.
Now,
that's not been universal, but that is kind of the release number pattern both Fabric and Sawtooth used when they went to 1.0. So it may be useful for us to hit those numbers at the right times to help indicate to the TSC and others that that's where we are.
Yeah.
Hey, Richard, cool. You mentioned the DID doc as being one of the sticky points. I was thinking one of the other sticky points is going to be network communication, to knowing which network you're communicating with. For example, if I'm trying to connect to multiple Fabric networks, then I'm going to need to understand which Fabric network I'm going to. So I'm still going to need that like pool namespace in a way, but we're going to have to namespace the different ledgers. And so I'm thinking that may become a bit of a sticky part as well.
I completely agree. And that's, so I see three steps here. The first is Indy currently doesn't support fully qualified DIDs. We need to have that exist so that the Aries portion of Indy, as it moves, needs to support fully qualified DIDs, or else we can't have any ledger interoperability. Then the peer DID is also really important as well. And then the full DID doc spec. We kind of have those three pieces of work. Now, part of my concern with this architecture and the way I'm trying to drive it means share the ideas, drive the conversation, is that I want to recover, it's in as short a period of time as possible, we need Aries to have the same utility that Indy had before we started the Aries project. Over time, we want to work with all sorts of different ledgers. I share that vision. But if we can't get it to the same level of utility that Indy's at, then people who were moving forward with Indy have to stop. And that's what I want to avoid. I'm trying to find how can we restore that capability.
My opinion, it's a little biased, but I think by the time we release the first code base, we're already ahead of where we were. So I think next week we're there, quite frankly. I think, you know, in looking at how we present it and how we welcome new developers into the community, I think that we just say there's a lot of Indy stuff underneath, but if you want to work on this, if you want to build on top of the stuff that's here, here's the path, and you just use the Aries stuff. If you're interested in drilling down and learning about what's underneath it and contributing to what's underneath it, that's awesome. And here's the path you can take to do that. But I think pretty quickly we're going to have, and if we can get some more like frameworks around, that could be good. But I think we're actually enabling many, many languages and things like that to use from a cloud agent perspective, be able to use what we've got and go forward faster than we could before.
And I agree that users of Vaughn Anchor will be in the Aries world within days. Fantastic. How do we get the rest of the Aries?
Vaughn Anchor, I think it's far more generic than you think. That's all. But you know, we've got to prove that. We'll prove it. But the programming model is so much easier than what we've been looking at before that I think it actually, they will be able to do that. And Vaughn Anchors doesn't exist anymore.
One of the big questions I have for this is, when can we start trying to pull in Fabric folks to use Aries as their main client library? And I think that's what's most interesting to me, because if you look at a lot of who's on these calls, it's outside of Troy and George, it's a lot of SSI people. And I think as the overarching goal of Ares is we have said, you know, it's SSI focused, but there's a broader capability of being able to communicate with any ledger. And I wonder what it's going to take to get there. Because like that, in my mind, that's a much harder task to tackle.
And the challenge is there is no Ares to integrate with Fabric today. There's the language library in Python that's almost there that integrates with Indy, but until we figure out this network resolver separation.
No, I think you're totally thinking about it the wrong way. What it is if you want to integrate with Fabric, you write a protocol that deals with Fabric. You don't have to have a resolver. You don't have to have anything else. You put it all in your protocol code. And so if you can think of something you want to do with Fabric, think of it as what is the protocol you need to implement to accomplish your integration across Fabric. And then you build the Fabric interface into that protocol. You may later take that and optimize it and put it into a different place, but you're still going to use it based on the protocol you're using to interact with Fabric. So, underlying everything is the pure did method. It's not underlying is not a ledger based did method. And so it totally turns things around that you only deal with a ledger when you have a protocol that requires dealing with that ledger.
So let me just take Kyle's question and kind of take it one step further. So I've got, you know, I'm having really detailed conversations with Ocean Protocol at the moment, and they're really keen to get involved with the Hyperledger community, which brings, you know, that brings kind of all the Ethereum ecosystem in line with the Hyperledger guys. And, you know, the Ares is a natural integration point, I think, but Ares might maybe not ready for those conversations. So if I wanted to invite Ocean Protocol to speak to people in Hyperledger, what's the entry point for them? Or is there a specific person I should introduce them to?
So my argument would be you implement them you talk to them at Ares, you talk about what their use case might be, and then you think about what DIDCOM protocol would work for that use case. And then you integrate at the protocol level.
Okay.
Capabilities built into the protocol. That would be my answer. But again, I don't know a whole lot about Ocean Protocol, so I don't, I'm substituting the word Fabric for Ocean Protocol because I'm assuming they're somewhat the same, but I don't know anything about Ocean Protocol, so.
I think it's bringing all of the, I mean, they're kind of aligned with Polkadot and Ethereum and all that lot. So it's outside of the Hyperledger.
We have the phenomenon of protocol at multiple levels. TCP/IP is a protocol, but in most DIDCOM conversations, we've been referring to that layer as a transport layer. And in the OSI model, in fact, that is called a transport layer. But anyway, it is a form of protocol. And we have the generic DIDCOM protocol, which is just basically all the conventions about how two possessors of DIDs talk to one another securely. And then we have the problem domain specific protocols, like how do you issue credentials, or how do you prove something, or how do you negotiate payment, or whatever those things are. So I think the integration level that Stephen is recommending is the higher level problem domain protocols, not the lower level DIDCOM protocols. I think DIDCOM is generic enough that we could just tell people to use it, but build an application level or domain specific protocol on top of it.
Now, so I'll give you an example, if I could.
I'm nervous, Stephen, that we spent a long time talking about the resolver, and we've got a number of other topics.
Sure.
But you can finish, but sure. I want to cut the conversation after your
statement. No. Actually, I'd be delighted if people joined, and we will extend this conversation tomorrow, because on the Indy working group call, because that's what I'm going to talk about, and we can go from there. So, sorry, Richard, you're right.
Yeah,
it was fun.
You make an excellent point about a different way to look at the resolver that could be really useful. That's fantastic. I'm still wrapping my brain around it. That's the only reason why I express them. But I have confidence that if you propose it, it's going to be useful. But the fact remains that we don't have an Aries wallet. We don't have Aries pack unpack. We don't have Aries and on creds. We need to move these things from Indy to Aries so that people can start using them. That's what I mean why, you know, where does Fabric work? It's like, well, we kind of got to get all the Indy stuff to where Fabric can use it. So that's my very short-term concern here.
I mean, as I say, they can use it today because Aries embeds Indy. Indy SDK is in every Aries agent. So they can already use it. What you're really talking about is how are we going to move the code around so there's different separation of concerns. But quite frankly, we're still going to embed almost every bit of it. I think it might come at different levels, but they can absolutely use it today because every Aries agent that exists, that's going to exist in the immediate future is just going to embed libindy.
And how do we help, but how do we split things so that, you know, Fabric people theoretically wouldn't want to embed libindy. They want to use libaries and then libfabric or whatever it is that ends up being the Aries resolver. How do we help move the code quickly so that we increase that participation rate from all the non-Indy people? Because that was the fundamental goal of Aries.
I hate to tell you, but I don't think we absolutely have to. I think we can do that incrementally, which means it's probably, it worries me because it may not get done, but it is more a pragmatic, you know, it's not a roadblock to making progress.
Well,
it
the
is
reason
a proper organization, but not a roadblock. So I don't know what the motivation, the urgency would be for that.
The urgency I feel is that we want to build things like DAD doc support, verifiable credentials 2.0, wallet improvements. And we want to do this in a way that is going to work in the Aries vision. And we can keep working on it, Indy, the way we did 3 months ago, but then why would we create Aries? So we want to get to the point where we can build on the long-term future instead of on something we know is going to have to migrate.
I think I have a proposed solution on how we handle this. So I think Steven's right that people in Fabric can do this today, but what it doesn't allow for is cross-ledger compatibility right now, which is one of the primary stated goals of Aries. And that's where the difficult conversation is that they can go build a protocol, but it only works on Fabric. And then they can go build a protocol, but it only works on Indy. But when can we make it capable to do the Fabric and Indy resolution of credentials and things of that nature? I think we can defer that discussion. And in the meantime, people can build their protocols independently, and then we'll have to figure out how to combine them together at a later point.
Yep, I think, I would agree.
And I agree with Steven's point. People can move forward today. Like, that's a valid thing everybody should understand, and we should talk about that more. But the sooner we can resolve these questions, the hopefully we can move forward faster. That's my concern.
These protocols that Kyle has just referred to, are these DIDCOM protocols that we're talking about, or which ones?
Domain-specific layer protocols? Content, so like the credential offer protocol would have to be credential offer Fabric or credential offer Indy rather than credential offer. But like the generic DIDCOM exchange, where we're encrypting messages and signing messages can work cross-compatible right now.
Bingo, that's it. And there's no reason that we couldn't have, once, you know, it is for me, baby steps, is that let's have something that works across, like a protocol level that is independent of the Indy cred exchange, verifiable credential exchange, have one that works on some other platform, and then look at, okay, we've got the two, how do we bring them together? And I think we'll know a whole lot more once we have two on top of an Aries, on an Aries agent. And I think that is totally doable in very short order, and we're about to put a bounty out on it. So
I'm excited to see that progress. Now, the other time pressure that Evernim feels, that I, as Evernim's team feels, is we've got a community of indie people going to production all based on LiveVCX. LiveVCX takes a very different abstraction model than we're seeing in the Aries community. And so we're trying to figure out what is the future of LiveVCX? What's that path to bring us in line with Aries as much as possible in as short a time as possible? And so that's the other part of the proposal. Is currently all the indie language libraries that we started calling thin bindings, we've proposed those all becoming Aries language libraries. That seems to be where people are talking. And the idea is to start saying, look, LiveVCX, we'll come up with an Evernim migration for Evernim customers, but we don't see a lot of adoption outside Evernim for LiveVCX. But there are a few key areas like revocation caching and Git fees. We probably need to figure out how to get that into LibAries or whatever we end up calling the future Aries thing. But most of it, we'll assume, gets implemented by the language libraries in Aries. And the LiveVCX as it is today, if somebody needs a Rust language library, LiveVCX does that very well. And so that could be used by whoever wants to maintain that in the future. But we don't. I don't have anybody who's clearly expressed interest in doing that in the short term. So that takes us through those three pieces of the plan. The fourth is courses. So the language wrappers then become Aries language wrappers. That gets us out of the business of, we can close a bunch of indie PRs to fix language libraries, because we can say, look, take this to Aries, because that's where this work needs to be done. And hopefully that'll push people to contribute in Aries more, as opposed to splitting it between indie and Aries. And then we can start looking.
Didn't we say we were leaving the binding libraries in indie?
Sergey and I were discussing today whether there's a need for binding libraries in indie. Currently, there's quite a few of those, and most of them, only two of them, three of them are being used by the indie CI/CD. The proposal was that we leave the ones that are required for CI/CD. And one of the proposals that Sergey was raising was, why don't we just use the Aries language libraries for CI/CD? Then we can get rid of that need completely.
Okay, my argument would be that we need the binding libraries anyway, you should maybe do a Hyperledger intern next year to write a generator so that we can make them generated but remain in indie, because they should be tied to the indie calls and should evolve with the indie calls.
That's right. They should version with indie. They don't version with Aries.
Exactly. And then Aries would treat that as a dependency, and the Aries library would be hand-coded idiomatic libraries that are maintained by a group of maintainers. So I would like to see the binding wrapper, like what has traditionally been called just the wrapper, remain in Indy and be tied to the Indy SDK.
Now, the alternate view is libindy today has the wallet, has anon creds, has pack unpack. If that becomes libaries and libaries consumes the Rust indie, then or through the C-callable API, then libaries provides that binding for everybody above it.
Seems to make more sense for that.
So, there are a number of discussion topics. We've had a lot of discussion already, but that's why I've been pushing us to these key questions. That's one of the questions is, the first question is how do we handle things like issues in code? We can talk about that later. But, how does that pluggable network mechanism work? Is it in C or is it in Rust? And is it compile time or is it runtime? Because if libaries is in Rust and libindy is in Rust, and we just say network resolvers have to be in Rust, that gives us some nice benefits. Rust is a nice language for this kind of thing, but that means you have to write your fabric resolver in Rust or whatever. Obviously, you could change the protocol. I mean, there's some other ideas, but that was what you're thinking about. And it's a compile time. That is a fairly quick move in this direction, and it allows us to take the current bindings and just move them to Aries, and you have those bindings. And then the Aries language libraries provide that nice, easy-to-use interface, but libAries has the very flexible interface that libMD has today.
So I like the laziness of just saying, oh, it's just got to be Rust, but I'm not sure if that would work for the Fabric integrations or some of the other folks who want to use it. So I would defer to Troy and Johnny and some of the others about whether that's a good idea or not.
Well, and the other approach is it's a C callable API, in which case, you know, it's almost the same. But libAries consumes that C callable API and then exposes it to whoever's on top of libAries through another C callable API. So you mentioned Troy and George. Anybody else have feedback on where they'd want to see that?
Well, I know that Troy, they've been working on Go, and Fabric's primarily written in Go. So Rust is not exactly lingua franca for the Fabric community. And then yeah. I'm assuming that with Various One and some of the other systems that Johnny's been working with, I'm just looking at the attendee list. I'm just singling out a few people I know have some expertise, somewhat of an opinion. Yeah.
So my two cents on that is we've been trying to do it with native Go as much as possible. And if there was something that we need that's in the Rust library, then we would just wrap what we need from the Rust library. But otherwise, we've been trying to keep the implementation as native Go as possible. That way we don't have to have compile time dependencies and such.
Yeah, and this is Johnny. So we're focused on Go. We have some Rust, but it's... mostly it's a developer. We actually, we have one implementation, that actually is really focused on Java. So I think it's just a heavy lift.
Yeah. And this is a discussion topic. We should discuss it more. But the architecture that would result is that, whether it's C callable or whether it's, you know, Rust, if we say it's compile time, then that pushes all the language bindings into Aries and gets Indy out of that business, which is convenient for Indy. Stephen came off mute. Did you have another comment?
Not me. No, I didn't.
Okay.
I had a quick question. I see you're getting close to the end. Can we make sure you leave time to ask the question at the end of who's willing to participate in this discussion further, because it seems very lively.
Yes, absolutely. So the other discussion topics are, do we need an Indy CLI or do we just have an Aries CLI? Do we move the entire CLI to Aries? I favor moving the entire CLI to Aries because it seems like people are going to interact through Aries, and Indy without Aries won't be nearly as useful. To just talk to the ledger, that's a very limited set of commands you can do.
Can you just throw it away?
Throw away the CLI?
I hate to say it, but I think Steven's proposal of using agents would be far more encouraging. And if there's a legitimate use case where the CLI makes sense, I would wonder if we can integrate that stuff into it. And if not, what is the prevention of it?
We have long talked about having a CLI agent. And if somebody wants to build that, it would be fantastic. But having a command line interface is a key use case for maintainers of validators in Indy, and it's frequently used by developers. And you know, it's the main way people handle their wallets today. So I don't think throwing it away is the answer, but you're right, it can evolve to be much more agent-y. Should evolve to be much more agent-y.
We actually have something that's the start of that. We hadn't thought of it as that, but we've got an Alice Favor demo that is basically a command line CLI driven type thing. So it is an interesting idea. That's the type of thing we could put up as a PR and welcome a new developer in to take a shot at or something like that. Cause I think it would be building it as an agent would be actually relatively straightforward and independent from the core functionality. So yeah, we'll think about that.
Now at this point, there's something like 10 engineering years of development in that Indy CLI. So I'd be very nervous about throwing it away and starting over as opposed to trying to add agent-y stuff to it. But I don't know much about the work you're proposing, Steve.
Yeah.
But the current CLI expresses a large amount of the flexibility and power of Indy, and it also handles things like offline transactions, multi-signatures, things like that that would take quite a while to reproduce. However, adding agent-y stuff to that CLI so it can actually do credential exchange is a highly requested feature, and I would love to see that in the short term.
I would be much more that we would have two different things. So I get what you're saying now about when you had said that limiting it to just Indy stuff would be problematic. I'd say you'd have an Indy CLI and an Aries agent CLI Aries agent might make sense. So anyway, we can talk about it.
Yeah, the challenge is Indy by itself in this vision won't do Anon creds. It won't have a wallet. So most of what CLI does today, you couldn't do without installing Aries anyway. Now there's a question about, shouldn't the CLI be pre-configured for a specific network to make it really useful? And that might be true. Maybe there's a separate sovereign CLI that takes the Aries CLI and pre-configures it for a specific network. But having an Indy CLI that doesn't do any of the Aries stuff, you know, if you don't have a wallet, you can't do much Indy stuff. So that was the reasoning.
Yeah.
Then last couple questions. There's another layer of how do we exactly do we divide these APIs? And, you know, we've had a lot of conversation. Payment libraries, another question. Are payment libraries implemented on the Aries tier or within the network resolver? Because every network's going to have its own payment provider, theoretically. But at the same time, you might want to use a payment provider from one network and credentials with another network. So we've been thinking that it's probably an Aries tier, especially with the way Aries decorators are spec'd. And then there's the whole question about hardware enclaves. Okay, that's the conversation. So we've got 8 minutes to talk about what's the next conversation we need to have.
Can we just back up for a second and just say why? So I don't understand where is the line then of Indy versus Aries? And I think going back to Kyle, sort of like I'm still struggling as far as it sounds like just rebranding Indy.
No. The difference is things that are related to the Indy blockchain stay in Indy. Things that are not related to the Indy blockchain specifically, but could work with any blockchain, move into Aries. The reason why it feels like so much is moving is because the SDK was always more oriented towards the agent problem than it was towards the ledger problem.
Yeah, Node doesn't move, and Node's a big portion of the code base.
Right. So let me just reiterate. So Ursa is the crypto library. That's staying separate. Indy uses Ursa for its cryptography. The pack unpack anon cred is currently in Indy, but is necessary for sending and receiving messages. Aries is the inter-ledger or inter-did communication that you're starting with sovereign and Indy and peer protocol. But you'd like to have a modular framework.
So you missed a couple of things
But you'd like to have a modular framework to actually have true interop with all DIDs, DID methods.
Right. So you included in Aries an on creds, but an on creds is a Indy concept and will stay in Indy as part of what implements verifiable credentials in Indy. And if we keep that at Indy, I think that's appropriate. You don't need that, and you don't need the sovereign stuff in Aries to have an agent, because the only thing we're going to be using to have an agent is the peer DID. And that is agnostic of what ledger you want to use for your verifiable credential exchange. But I mean, we're getting right back to the conversation we had earlier, which is this, you know, where does the ledger interface fit in? It actually does not fit in at the bottom layer. In my opinion, it doesn't fit in at the bottom layer of Aries. It fits at the higher level protocols, the message families, where you want to accomplish interactive things.
Right, and this gets into just the resolver, though, is that you need to have a stack, somewhere in that stack, be able to resolve the DID document in the other methods in order to do de communication.
Yeah, nope. I think it would be
nope, you don't.
Be you don't need it, but I think it would be a bad choice to say that that is production ready, because then you are siloing to a ledger, which right. is part of the goal around here is to not do that.
Right. So you want to do that, and it turns out you want to do that. You want to attach to the ledger when you need to do something that requires the ledger, and that to just spin up an agent and run it and have it connect and communicate, you don't need a ledger.
Correct. I guess what I'm interpreting it to mean is that part of why other people are participating in this is that they want to be able to connect their ledgers into this for the limited yep. use cases like verifiable credentials and stuff.
Yep.
And that's where it would be bad for us to design it in such a way that, yes, you can get in here right now, but your protocols only work with your protocols and my protocols only work with my protocols. I think it would be better for us to push that abstraction layer down. But I think this is going to go too deep if we continue this.
So
I have a slightly different opinion.
Can I also offer another point that I think potentially could squirrel, but I think is an important distinction. I think our resolution, if we look at how DID docs are managed, they're basically CRUD entities as a data model behind a DID. And so DID resolution is merely the read aspect of it. Create, update, and delete should be handled by like a registration component similar to sort of inspired by DNS. And we should be thinking about it in an arbitrary way and implementing a driver pattern on that side as well. So Aries, if we have an indie DID doc implementation for indie based DIDs in the context of a sovereign overlay, it should be a plugged in driver for creating, updating, and deleting DID docs under that DID method domain. Your DIDs should also be constrained to that as well. And so the driver, I'm merely pointing out that this driver analogy that is showing up in the universal resolver should be uniform for both resolution and registration and or management.
Tobias, this is Drummond. I just said the same comment, but given the variance in DID methods for, and I'm one of the maintainers of the DID registry, so as new methods are getting registered, I'm reading through and seeing the tremendous variance in those methods. I must say, treating them as protocols seems to make a lot of sense, because the abstraction that they all produce DID documents, first of all, that applies only to reading, to go looking it up. They have, you know, very different methods of creating a DID. They have completely different yep. methods of updating the DID and of deleting it. And then, so I'm not saying that the concept of a resolver and or registration service is not relevant. I'm just saying that it is Stephen's concept of starting to just simply treat DID methods and like other protocols is one we should look really closely at, because the variance in those protocols are, it seems like they're tailored, you know, it's tailor made for what Aries, you know, protocol modules are designed to do.
No, we're almost out of time, and we're not going to resolve the where in the stack is the resolver question today. But my key question is, my challenge is, I've been participating in the Aries community for months now, and this, I haven't seen anybody say, here's how we take where we're at in Indy and put it somewhere where Aries people find it and contribute to it and build on it, and we can move forward. You know, Stephen did have a concrete proposal, which is we just don't do this for a while, and we just keep using Indy. That's a reasonable proposal. Here's another proposal. I want to see what other people's proposals are, because we got to get moving this forward. I got to get I personally need a mental model for how I can work with Aries code so that I can proceed on my roadmap.
So given the time frame of this, can we move some of these discussions over, like the resolver discussion, over to GitHub issues? And then also I have a final question for everybody, which is to Richard's point, which is who is willing to participate in this work in order to actually go write the code, to move stuff from Indy over to Aries and to do this resolver abstraction and these things necessary. So if you're...
Excellent question.
On a high level, if you're willing to participate in with that code, either at your agent level or in the Rust level, please raise your hand so that we can kind of just do a general litmus test of how many people we have working on this, and we'll work from there. So I intend to work on this at the Rust layer and at other layers as well.
I can't raise my hand because I'm host, but my hand is raised.
Does anybody object to me writing down collaborators right here?
If you call us collaborators, it makes us sound like we're involved in a conspiracy.
That is against the Hyperledger Code of Conduct. I mean,
it's one big
non-competition clause.
I got to leave now.
Back to the start of the meeting. We did it. All right.
Another dramatic reading.
We went looped back right on time, exactly 1 hour, an hour and a half ago. We talked about the anti-competition stuff, so back to it. So we're done. I think that's our meeting for the day. Thanks, everyone. That's Sam. Will be back next week. We'll have a real host. So good stuff. And thank join us tomorrow for the Indie Call. Thank you, Richard. Take care, all.
Bye-bye.